Welcome everyone to this third class of the Agents of Conscious Business course. This is Diederik again. I'll be doing most of these calls. If you're wondering why it's always me, that was an intentional decision, given my role. But next week, it'll be Jeroen, because I'll be away in South Africa doing some cool stuff that's totally related to the topic of today's call. Because this class with me on the phone is Brian Robertson, who I'll briefly introduce. Brian is an experienced entrepreneur. He's an organizational pioneer and most well known for his work developing Holacracy, which is also why I'm flying out to South Africa next week. We work a lot with Holacracy. Waking Up the Workplace runs on Holacracy. We love it, and it's really part of the reason we asked Brian to teach this class today. It's, for those of you that don't know it already, kind of an organizational operating system for processing tensions, another thing that we'll go into today. He pioneered it at the fast-growing software company that he founded and led for 7 years. And then from there has co-founded Holacracy One, that is now further developing the method and bringing it into the world. And we've spent a lot of time with Brian and the other guys from Holacracy One, got trained in it, use it a lot, and it's something that we think you should know about. Without further ado, here's Brian. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Great. Thank you. Pleasure to join you.
Yeah.
And
glad
hello,
to have
everyone.
You. Yeah, and of course, everyone is on mute for now, but we'll do some interaction during this call. The setup is that I'm going to invite you, Brian, to just start sharing some of the insights that we asked you to share in this class, particularly around tensions, around processing tensions at first. We'll do another breakout halfway through this call and then dig a little bit deeper and also get to some Q&A. And at the end, after 90 minutes, we'll do the usual 30-minute discussion forum where everyone can just hang out in small groups and talk to others. So that's the setup for today. In a way, Brian, we asked you to do a difficult thing because when we were thinking about teachers for this course, we said, well, it would be great to get Brian because he's got a really different vision of how organizations could work. It's pretty radical, I think. And at the same time, this course is not about transforming organizations necessarily. You know, this course is really focused on individuals practicing these ideas of conscious business. Of course, if you founded and own a company, then maybe you have a lot of influence in your organization and you could change it. But for a lot of people, they're just showing up as employees or consultants, and they cannot just change the organization. So my question to you was, do you think that if it's not implementing Holacracy, that people actually can still take some of your ideas and practice them? And then you kind of surprised me and said, yeah, sure. So here we are. And I'm really curious to hear a little bit. Maybe you can say a few words about Holacracy just to kind of bracket that and park that. And then we can dive into tensions.
Yeah, that sounds great. Holacracy certainly is my main focus of my work, but you don't have any organizational system without working through us humans. I think that forms a core of Holacracy anyway, so I think there's a lot you can do even without all the systems and structures of Holacracy around you. Some of the principles, some of what I've learned trying to figure out how to improve our organizational systems, I think are really relevant whatever system you find yourself in, because you always have something you can do. And let me share a story as a starting point. It's a story that is true and served as something of a metaphor for me and my journey, and I think it might kind of highlight and frame some of the stuff we'll be talking about. It's a story of piloting. I have a private pilot's license, and Diederik, you've heard this story, I know, probably a couple of times now. Back when I was first learning to fly, I had my first cross-country solo flight, which is the first time I flew without an instructor in the plane, hundreds of miles away from my home. And I had maybe 20-some hours of flight time under my belt at this point. They actually let you get up in the plane and fly an aircraft alone with 20 hours of training. And I'm flying along, and along the journey, the low voltage light comes on my instrument panel. And, they don't teach you much about the plane's hardware. So I see this low voltage light, and I'm not really sure what it means. I can kind of guess, So my instinct, though, what I did was check all of my other instruments, right? So I checked my altimeter, and it said, you're not losing any altitude. Everything's fine. Nothing's wrong. I checked my airspeed indicator. It said, you're not losing speed. Everything's great. There's no problem. I checked my navigation aid. It said, you're perfectly on course. Nothing's going wrong. There's no problem here at all. So one by one, every other instrument on that dashboard told me, nothing anomalous, everything's fine, don't worry about it. So what I did was I let those other instruments outvote the low voltage light. I ignored it. I said, it can't be that big of a problem, right? Nobody else senses it. I nearly crashed the plane. It was a terrible decision, a really terrible decision. And I learned a really valuable lesson, which is that low voltage light is tuned in to different information than every other instrument on that control panel. And this became aside from a near-death experience, maybe that's why it became a pretty significant metaphor for me. I did make it down onto the ground after a whole string of issues. It occurred to me, we do this in our organizational life all the time, right? We humans, when we show up in an organization, we become sensors for that organization's world, that organization's reality. We become the instruments. And it is through us that our organizations are able to sense and respond to their world. And we tune into different things, right? We're different people, different types, different backgrounds, different. We tune into different things, and it's often something critical sensed by a minority or even by a sole individual that doesn't make it in, doesn't get integrated. And this was, I realized, my experience in organizations, and this is why I was unhappy with my own organizational life at that point. I had lots of insights that I had no way to process. Right, I perceived a lot. I sensed things that could be better in that organization, and I couldn't do anything with them. I learned early on that if you sense something and the boss doesn't see it, good luck getting it processed. Right, it's very unlikely. And with my own journey, I did the only logical thing at that point. I became a boss. Right. I can't process anything if the boss doesn't see it, so I'll just become the boss. And then I realized, well, there's still a boss above me there. I soon realized if the CEO doesn't see it, you're not going to get it processed. So I said, well, I'll just drop out and become a CEO. And I did that. I built my own company. And then I realized, man, now I've got to see everything. So the first move I make is to try to become the most conscious leader I can be. Right, to consciously be able to sense everything I possibly can. And my God, that is an exhausting journey. And eventually, I kind of woke up somewhere along the way, woke up from my process of trying to become more conscious and realized, oh my God, one, let's face reality. There's no way I'm going to see everything that everybody here does. There's no way I can be that superhuman, conscious, developed. None of us can. Right, we will all tune in to different things. And the second realization, I had just built the exact company that I worked so hard to escape. Right, one where in order to get whatever we sense harnessed and used, the boss has to see it. So for me, that really kicked off, I think, the deeper part of my journey, which was, all right, how do we show up together as humans and contribute to a purpose together in an organization in a way that allows all of us to be an instrument for that organization's flight, right, towards its purpose? How can we all show up, be a full instrument, so that our full capacity to sense reality, to sense things that could be better than they are, to sense potentials, can be fully harnessed and integrated? Because that's really all I wanted all along. I want to be well used by reality. I want my full capacity as a human to be harnessed and integrated. So, you know, for me, that journey then became, well, what gets in the way of that? You know, what are the things that get in the way that force us to have to funnel everything through one super heroic conscious leader? Because that there's a limit to that. So how can we each individually show up as an agent and collectively work together with others showing up as their conscious agents together in a way that doesn't co-opt, derail, dominate each other or the purpose at play and process everything we sense? So that's kind of my framing. And what I thought would be most useful to share with you guys here on the call is just a little more about some maybe new distinctions or new ways of looking at things that help you sort out and leave space for everyone to be able to process everything they sense. So I can go further from there, Diedrich, but let me pause and take a breath. Anything in that you wanted to dig into further or ask or prompt me on, or shall I continue on with some more thoughts?
Well, there was a lot in there that I'm kind of processing. To use that phrase. And one thing that particularly stands out for me, last week we went into the topic of integral leadership with Brad Thomas. So a lot of it was about leadership, about communication, about translation. And I'm really intrigued by this one thing that you were saying, where you said, well, you can try to be this really conscious leader, you know, which takes a lot of energy when you want to see more and integrate more. But there's a limit to that. And at some point that you kind of woke up from that and you said, okay, now I'm that boss and I'm that, or I created that organization that I escaped from in the first place. So I'm really intrigued at this point about, you know, being a conscious leader, and then that's not enough for creating, let's say, a more conscious organization. And other than that, happy to dive in a little bit more and hear more about the things that you said get in the way.
Yeah, and actually that is one of the things that gets in the way. Realized this in myself first and foremost. My own attempt to be the most conscious leader I could be was actually getting in the way. And it served me. It's not knocking. It served me to a point and then got in my way. And one of the reasons it got in my way, I started trying to be the hero, the conscious hero who senses everything, who anybody can show up with and express their tensions, their issues, and I can kind of see it all and try to integrate it and process it all. And let me tell you, that actually gets in the way. It's as soon as I take that stance, I'm the conscious hero leader trying to help others, right? As soon as I take that stance, one, the flip side of the hero is the villain. So as soon as you invite others to give up their power to you, right, to look to you to solve their problems, to look to you to process their tensions, right, as soon as they're all looking to you to do that, man, it's a dangerous relationship. You're in a parent-child dynamic with them, you know, for one, and I think a lot of the focus on conscious leadership is effectively trying to be good parents, which is great. It's a step forward from all the bad parent leaders I think many of us have experienced. But an even more powerful step is figuring out how to step off that game board entirely so that you're not the good parent, you're not the hero leader to them, the savior, because the other side of that is you're the villain when you fail to solve all their problems, and they're the victim. But instead, how can you show up autonomously without getting in the way of others processing their stuff and using their insights? You know, the biggest thing I have about conscious leadership is, you know, one, of course, I love it. The more conscious you can be, the more you can sense, and the more you have an opportunity to be an agent of whatever purpose you want to serve and express into the world. And be careful, because it's also a trap. You know, you need to process what you sense and leave others the space to process theirs and not fall into a savior, parental leadership pattern with them. And I think one of the key distinctions, now might be a good time to introduce it, that I use, I work with, my work with Holacracy works with, but it's become so powerful for us. We use it all the time, well outside of the context of Holacracy. I use it in my day-to-day life, is the concept of a tension. And I mean something specific by that. We use the word tension to capture the feeling of sensing some gap between where we are and where we could be, or some potential. So we use this word because we often sense things as humans, not just from our mind, right, but our whole system. We feel it in our gut, emotionally, physically. We sense things with our whole system, and they often show up as tension, this sense of tension. And we define tension not as a negative thing at all. This definition has no negative connotation to it. It is simply the felt sense of a gap between where we are, current reality, and some sensed potential, where we could be. Right? And when you have a gap between those two, and you can really hold both, what you've got is a huge source of energy. Right? Like a rubber band stretched between two points, there's energy there that can be used to pull current reality to manifest the potential. But only if you can hold it and process it. And even the root of the word, tension, it comes from the Latin tendere, to stretch. Right? It's. I don't mean this in a negative way. But what we often do, what we often don't have, I think, in our day-to-day life, we don't have a really good, clear sense of what tension am I tuning into, what gap between where we are and where we could be, what tension am I tuning into to resolve. And we definitely don't have the discipline in our modern cultures to hold and separate what is the tension I'm sensing from what is the tension you're sensing. So, for example, have you ever seen a meeting or experienced a meeting where everybody shows up and then somebody raises a topic and everybody fills and floods the space with everything, every tension they sense around that topic in an all big undifferentiated mess? And it becomes the mental equivalent of a gladiator match. I think our societies have evolved beyond the physical combat sport to the mental combat sport, right? Now we have meetings where everybody competes for space to get their tensions processed. And in the end, we often leave the meeting with nobody's tensions actually processed all that well. And the ones that get to process tensions are either the loudest, the ones screaming the most, or the ones that play the politics best, or, you know, whatever. So I think where we often devolve in these meetings is because we're not being clear on what is the one tension sensed by one person that we're trying to address. So I think one of the most powerful things I've ever experienced in meetings is just the shift to one tension at a time sensed by one sensor, one person at a time, and take turns. And it really is as simple as, you know, the little kids on the playground learning to take turns with the toy. We need to learn to take turns processing our tensions. So instead of one big topic where we're competing for the space, all tugging to get our version of the tension processed, it's one person at a time. Okay, Diedrich, it's your agenda item. You've raised the agenda item. What tension are you sensing? Let's all help you figure out how to resolve that one tension that you're sensing to your satisfaction. And it doesn't matter if we don't understand it or see it, because our goal isn't to process our own stuff. It's just to help you process whatever you see. You know, we don't want to ask the fuel gauge, do you understand this electric thing? You know, and we're not going for consensus. It's a fool's errand to try to build consensus among all my instruments about this electric problem that one instrument talks about. You know, rather, what we can do is just honor that sensor and give it space to figure out how to process whatever it is that it's sensing. And then we can take turns. Then the fuel gauge gets its time. Then the airspeed indicator can process whatever tensions it senses. Likewise in a company, and when we work together, I think just getting clarity, whose tension are you trying to resolve? Who's acting as the sensor for the tension? And there's no such thing as all of us. We do not sense things exactly the same way. We might think we do, but we're not. I think we, to best get through our tension processing so that we all can really use what we sense, we need to be clear that it's one person at a time and one tension at a time. tune into attention represented by one person, figure out how to address it. If anyone else has attention about it, hold it until your turn to process your version of it. And if you do that, your meetings will get so vastly much better than everything we've experienced so far. And I know we'll talk more about meetings and come back to that a little bit more later. But just to highlight this new distinction, this idea of a tension being sensed and one tension at a time processing. And then one other piece I want to offer, I think another thing that often gets in our way, when we lose the grounding in a real tension that is limiting the ability of us to do our work and instead get stuck in our mind. And this is another downside of being smart. Dietrich, I'm sure you're a smart guy. You probably have experienced this. I certainly have. The danger with being smart is that you are too smart for your own good, right? You sense things theoretically. You know, I can think about a problem and think about all my many theoretical solutions to it. And if I'm not careful, before long, I can be completely stuck in mind and removed from the reality of what's actually needed to get the work done. Right? I can get stuck in the theory, the big picture, you know, systems thinking. I can see the whole system and get stuck in all of that space. Another thing that gets in our way and blocks us from actually getting the real tensions that are limiting the expression of a purpose addressed is when we get stuck in our mind, when we get predictive. We get stuck in predicting control. We try to figure out the perfect answer for this in theory all up front. Oh, and for everything, like, let's take all these tensions. I did this as a CEO and a leader all the time, right? I'd hear everybody's tensions about a topic, and I get stuck in my mind trying to theoretically address them all. And I come up with these big plans and this big design, and then I put it into practice thinking it was the best thing, you know, since sliced bread, and then it wouldn't work fully. I'd miss something, or it's just a colossal waste of time and energy. Instead, what I've learned to do is stay really grounded on what tension am I sensing, and really sensing, not theoretically from my mind, but where have I actually experienced a constraint to expressing the purpose of one of the roles I fill, right? Of whatever it is, whatever roles I fill, whatever work I'm trying to do, where are the actual, real experienced constraints? And they can be small little things. And instead of trying to solve all the problems of the organization and all the problems of the world from mind, I'm going to look at one little thing that's actually getting in the way of me expressing my work. And how do I resolve that one clear tension, clearly, into some kind of new clarity? And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And I'm going to leave space for others. So when somebody else is processing their tension, I'm not going to co-opt their space, right, to process my own because it reminds me of my own. I'm going to leave them the space and say, how can I show up and help you process your tension? With clarity that it's not my job to process your tension for you. Right? It's your job to process your tensions. How can I help? What would you like from me? Not let me solve your problem for you. So very different stance to take. And in many ways, the irony of this is what you're doing with this stance is not trying to be a, quote, better leader. You're trying to leave space for everybody to be a leader of their work, of their roles, by processing what they sense with their consciousness while doing the same with yours. And if everybody's doing that, you've got a whole lot more capacity than any one person can possibly bring to bear on the purpose. So I'll shut up there for a minute. How's that landing, Dietrich? What else do you want to dig into around that?
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, it's one of the reasons why I got so excited years ago when I first found out about Holacracy, is because I see so much when we talk about conscious business, and of course that's really the core topic for this course and for the whole series of Waking Up the Workplace. There's so many pieces to that, but one piece that comes up really quickly is more the individual piece. So what does it mean for me to be conscious and to not be conscious just at work or to be conscious in my, you know, in the weekend, but to actually take all of me and all of my consciousness and my heart and soul and mind and everything else, to take that into the workplace, to take that into my work. I think that's where your work is adding something unique and important, because as soon as we go into the workplace, there's all these structures and all these ways of doing things, all these routines and habits And a lot of them are quite old, in a way. And it feels often like they come from a different time, well, they do, and maybe even from a different paradigm. And when I found out about Holacracy and about the rest of your work, I felt like finally this was, you know, not just kind of a practice that I could do to be a more conscious leader, but it was actually a structure. It was a system. It was something that's not just dependent on me being conscious or not, having a good day or not, but that you can actually install and create a more structural or systemic intervention or transformation or whatever. So that's what I'm really excited about. And you know, I was also just wondering, you know, listening to this, to me, it's really familiar. And then all of a sudden I was wondering, like, why is this relevant to this course, you know, to conscious business? And that's where these thoughts came up. I'm also wondering, if I ask you that question, like, how is this perspective of tensions and processing tensions, how is that relevant to conscious business?
Yeah, well, think of a tension as the fundamental unit of sensing. It is the output of consciousness, or rather the means of consciousness. So each of us individually, when we show up, we sense things through what I call attention. So if you don't sense it, you can't do anything with it. So the first part of conscious business is conscious. You've got to sense attention. So, you know, that's only the first part. The second thing you have to do is figure out what to do with whatever it is you sense. And I think just getting clarity on just having that distinction of a tension, a single tension, and it might be very minor. I'm sure all of you have experienced a time where there's some process and you notice there's a hole in the process. Something is getting dropped. That's attention. Or there's something inefficient that could be better. That's attention. Somebody needs to pay attention to something and isn't. That's attention. Our current compensation system is causing some problems in this part of the company. That's attention. Right? That's how we sense things. We sense things through tension. And just getting clear, I think right now often they just show up and the tensions own us. You know, we just feel them and we react. And the first thing to get clear on is I'm sensing something, right? This tension, this is a sensing. I'm sensing something. Let me get clear. What is it I'm sensing? Not just a general big mess of tensions, but here's one specific tension. And now how am I going to process that or resolve that in whatever system I'm in, whatever structure? Yes, Holacracy has lots of great structures to help you, but that's just one possibility. You can process them in a conventional structure just as well. The question is how. How are you going to process that? And the more clear you are that when you create a space or when you come together with others, your job is not to process their tensions. That's a trap of the conscious leader. Your job is to process your tensions, take turns with them, and help them process theirs when it's their turn. Your job is not to be the hero, not to be the hero trying to solve their tensions for them, which is the pull when you sense so much, but rather to get your own stuff out of the way when it's their turn and allow them the space to process their tension and the support as they need it. So I think you know, those are some of the answers. Whatever systems we're in, the key question, if we're going to have a conscious business, it better harness the consciousness of the people within. Right? How else is it going to, right? And that's the greatest capacity our organizations and businesses have available to them. It's the consciousness of us humans within, for at least most businesses. You know, nowadays, that consciousness is the key source of value creation in the world. So if we want to have a conscious business, we better have one that harnesses the consciousness of the people within. And if we get sucked into the allure of being the heroic leader, right, if we do exactly what I did, which was make sure I built a system where I got to process everything and nobody else did if I didn't see it, right, then you're limiting that huge resource. You're limiting things to just what you can sense in your consciousness. And likewise, if you show up in a meeting and you make anything that comes up about your tension, somebody brings up a topic and that triggers a related tension for you, so you jump in and you try to solve your tension, thinking you're being a good leader. You're sensing something and trying to resolve it, right? If you are jumping in and violating their space to solve their tension, what you're doing is shutting down the capacity for the organization to harness and integrate their tension. Right? So for me, just being aware of this, and it shows up not just in my organization, but day-to-day life with my family, with my friends, just being aware that when somebody else is sensing a tension, even if I'm sensing a related tension too, or even if I think it's the same tension, it never is. just taking turns and leaving space. So it's not about me co-opting every space around me to process what I sense, thinking I'm going to be the good hero leader doing it. Rather, it's making sure we each have space and turns to use our consciousness. Even if I don't quite understand, sometimes I don't think what they're processing is that important. Doesn't matter. You know, the fuel gauge probably doesn't think that electric thing is that important either. That's not trustworthy.
Mm.
What I can do is hold a space where everybody can process their tensions for the sake of a purpose, and do the same with mine. That's a very different way of showing up, and it's a very different way for those leaders, right? Leaders are used to trying to solve other people's tensions. This is a different stand. It's one that says, no, I'm not going to solve your tensions. It's not my job. You get to resolve your own tension. What I'll do is get out of your way. I won't co-opt your tension and make it about me leading and solving my own. I'll give you the space and say, what do you need? How do I support you solving your tension? But we get stuck in that all the time. We co-opt other's space. I mean, how many times, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, I've certainly done it. Somebody brings up an issue, it triggers a related thing in for you, and then you jump in and you're, before you know it, probably unconsciously, you're trying to resolve whatever it is that's causing tension for you. Right? And you know, isn't that interesting? When often it's somebody else that brought up attention for them, and yeah, it's a simple thing of taking turns. I hate to say it, what I have for you is not that profound. It's what we teach kids in school, take turns. But now take turns being conscious and processing the result of that consciousness. And if we do that and we do that efficiently and quickly, then we have an organization that can fully harness and tap all of our consciousness.
I love that. And what I love about this is that it's not just something that you know, sometimes when we talk about conscious business, we think about, you know, vision, about values, about like the big ideas for a business and why it exists. And all of that is true and is important, and you want to be conscious of that. Yet it's also what you just mentioned, like there's a process. Maybe it's contracting. Maybe it's something else. And there's a hole in it, and it keeps getting dropped. And that, you know, creates a tension, and then the way that you deal with that tension is you can bring more consciousness to that. So that's conscious business too. I really appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, how many?
I also want to.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I know David Allen will probably talk about this too in your call with him upcoming. He and I share a very similar view, I think, on this. What Holacracy does, similar to what his method does. And what this, forget about Holacracy, what this kind of stance does of getting clear on processing all these little tensions using your consciousness, it clears space. And clear space allows purpose to manifest. You don't need to do anything to push a purpose into the world. You know, it will come, it will show up if you hold a space that is empty, that allows it, that's free of clutter. Same thing with values. I think all these efforts to organizational values are often about some subset of people trying to push their values on others and get them to align with them. If you get all that off the table and just clear space for the purpose to do its work in the world, right? And if you or yourself become an agent of consciousness and use your consciousness, you know, all that stuff is great, but all that stuff is still coming from mind. And if you can just get beyond that, get to a space where you're noticing, what am I sensing? And what am I sensing that's a constraint to something trying to work through me in the world? And honor that, remove that constraint, and trying to work through the organization I'm in service to in the world, right? If we can remove those constraints, purpose will flow. We don't need to push it, force it, even understand it to some degree. It will flow. So yeah, it's a very different stance and a different way of being, and it's perfectly complementary and compatible with a lot of the other work on conscious leadership, as long as you hold it well and maintain the boundary. It's your job to be conscious and a conscious leader of yourself, first and foremost, not of others. Let them do that for them.
And we'll go into, you know, how to do that and what it looks like when you do that. We'll go into that a little bit more. But before we do that, I think this would be a great time to give people a chance to just sit back and reflect for a little bit and to think about, you know, what we've talked about in this first piece, and to share some reflections with others. So I want to suggest that we move into a breakout group. Would that be okay, Brian?
Yeah, that's great. Do you want to frame that, Dietrich? Do you want me to?
Yeah, no, I think, and I have a suggestion, and then you comment whether you think that's the way to go or not. Because from what you were just saying, I think the question that would be really valuable to reflect on is, we talked about sensing and processing tensions. So what gets in the way of each of us sensing and processing tensions? And I'd like people to reflect on that, you know, like first for themselves in their own work, but also what they see around them. If they work in an organization with more people, maybe they're part of a team or they work with clients or, you know, in some way they work with other people. Like what gets in the way of you sensing and processing tensions, and what gets in the way of others and of the organization itself sensing and processing tensions? Do you think that would be a good question to give people maybe like 10 minutes for?
Yeah, and let me add one other piece to it. How do you get in the way of others processing their tensions? You know, and we all have ways. I sometimes do it by trying to be helpful and process their tension for them, which gets in the way, or by getting stuck in my head and in theory and removed from the reality of real tensions experienced. So, and everyone has their own. So, yeah, how do you also get in the way of others, often by trying to be helpful or what have you, but how do you get in the way of others processing their tensions? Think about that as well.
Yes, beautiful. Okay, so I'll give quick instructions for the breakout. Most people will have experienced this once or twice now, but for those people who are new to it, it's kind of a strange experience to be in this virtual environment and to then all of a sudden be in a breakout room. So a few pieces on that. In a minute, we're going to break out into groups of three. And when we break out in groups, we will transfer you from the main room, which is where we are now, all of us together, to a smaller breakout room where there will be you and two other people. Maybe there will be a few groups that only have two people. Then we'll unmute your microphone so that you can talk to the other people. You can start answering this question. So we'll take about 10 minutes, which means that we'll have around a little over 3 minutes each to answer this question. So just be aware of time. We'll give you a chime after 3 minutes so you'll know when to switch. In a minute you'll hear a chime and then you'll be in the room. Just one of you jump in and say, you know, hi, this is Diederik, so the others know you're there. Then from there, one person starts, and I'll repeat the question. So what gets in the way of sensing and processing tensions for you, for the organization or the team that you are part of, and also how do you get in the way? So just spend a few minutes talking about that, and then after that we'll hear from a few of you to see what came up. So Ewan, when we're ready, give them the chime and breakouts. Hi everyone, back in the main room from the breakout. Hope that was good talking to a few other people. So I'm really curious, you talked about, you know, what gets in the way of processing tensions. How do you get in the way of processing tensions? Really curious to hear from a few people. I'm sure Brian's curious too. Just press 1 to raise your hand so that we can see you and unmute you. And we'd love to hear from you if you have some thoughts or some things that you talked about or heard other people talk about in terms of what got in the way of processing tensions. So just press 1. And then we'll have time for maybe a few quick reflections before we have a short break. So let's start with the first person. Sandra, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Great.
Well, actually, Melisha and I had the same sort of obstacle in terms of the tension, and it's I described it as, I don't like living in gray land. I process gray very quickly. So, you know, there's a problem, there's a discussion, and then I already want to solve it. I want to be at the end. And so I basically try to roll over everybody's tension and just go, okay, it's done. and we were talking about how that just may take more time in the long run because I have to then go back and soothe everyone's feelings because I've just, you know, trying to be a good leader, I shouldn't be making those decisions, but I get so frustrated in the discussion part of it.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And I thought what you said, Brian, was really true. It's just like, you know, being smart, you can process more faster, and sometimes it's great because you can, but then often you're on the next thing and everyone else is still on the first thing, and they do want to discuss it, and you're so done, you know.
Yeah, so. And of course, one of the challenges or traps there too is I found even with others I work with that don't quite have my speed or pacing or ability to fully keep up, they still sense things I don't.
Yes,
so the danger
yes.
is I see 90% or 80% of what they sense, and I'm, you know, ready to move forward and plow forward, but I've missed something.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and it also...
I always say I'm willing to go and revisit it if someone brings up something new, but they're so intimidated by my move to the end, I don't think I'm getting the best of them.
Yeah, really
recognize that one. Thank you for sharing that one. Let's hear from, let's see, there's a few people there. Let's hear from Melba. Hi, Melba.
Hi. I talked to Yanni, but something that struck me about myself was that I always think that I can sense what the other people are sensing. And as we just heard, this is absolutely impossible. And I think that's one of the things that really gets in my way. I'm liking to finish quickly and to think I've managed it all, as we just heard. That's very typical. But just the fact that you think you sense what somebody else is sensing and you're just a different person altogether, there's no way that you can do that 100%. So it would be great to stop and listen and give them the space.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's there's something addictive, too, I think, about having that feeling. I certainly went through this of just, you know, knowing that you see so much, and especially, you know, you're interested in conscious business. You know, you see even more. You're developing your own consciousness, and it's so addictive to think that.
Yes, and a bit intimidating to the other people when you're always saying, I know exactly what you mean, and of course you don't.
Exactly, yeah. And yet there's a real power position of, you know, taking a stance of, so what? You know, if they're going to be fully contributing to this endeavor we're in together, this organization or whatever, just leaving space and saying, so, okay, you know, your space to process your tension, whatever you sense. What do you need? How can I help? And it's a different stance, and it's so liberating. Frees
yes.
you from having to be the hero or the villain.
And they're very happy then.
Yeah, it's giving them space to, you know, be their own conscious entity and agent in this endeavor.
Yeah, super.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Melba. So let's hear from one more person. There's a lot of you that are ready to share your reflections. I love that. Hi, Tim. Let's hear from you.
Hey. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, Tim. Good, thanks.
Thank you, by the way. This Holacracy thing is just kind of blowing my mind a little bit. I have more of a question than anything else, and that is one of the things I like about the idea of Holacracy is it feels like you're moving past task delegation and just working with the task. And it seems like attention is different than a task, and is different than solving a problem for someone or just solving a problem. Can you maybe give an example of attention and how that is different, or am I just sensing something different?
No, you're spot on. And actually, I'll use that chance to plug David Allen's talk. So attention is an experience. It's the felt sense of something. And then the question becomes, what do you process it into? And I think the key... And Holacracy helps you do this, but anyone can do this, whatever system you're working within. The key is to get that tension you sense processed into clarity. And there's different types of clarity. So you can get it processed into clarity of what action you're going to take. You can process it into clarity of an outcome you're going to work towards. It'll take multiple actions to get there. You can process it into clarity that you need to show up differently in how you interact with others. That's something entirely different. It's not a task or an outcome at all. You can process it into an expectation that you want to set with somebody else, right? Your tension could be addressed by setting an expectation that's different than the ones currently at play. So there are many ways to process the tension, and the key is to get them to clarity of some kind. Don't just let them sit at attention, and definitely don't ignore them, or you're dropping your own consciousness. You're limiting yourself, right? Get it processed. The question is, into what kind of clarity? And David Allen's work, and he'll talk about this, is just brilliant at showing you how to process it into clarity when it's actions or outcomes that you want to hold, and actually several other things as well. His system is by far the best I've ever found. It's incredible. It's amazing. I really can't say enough about it. Recognize, too, there are other ways sometimes you process attention and that aren't covered by, he talks about more tracking your commitments, your actions, your projects, things like that to yourself, commitments to yourself. But there's also sometimes where you need to set a different expectation in the way you're working with somebody else. Sometimes you need to do that to process attention. So recognize your tension may have many different ways of being processed, and it may need multiple of them to get fully resolved. Right? And attention is none of those things. It's the experience. It's your consciousness speaking to you. It's your clue that there's something to process into clarity of some kind. And that's the next game, is what do you process it into clarity of?
Exactly. And it's something, like you said, that David Allen goes into a lot, particularly as it goes, as it concerns what can I do with the tension. So the class with David is in a few weeks. And of course, you know, like your area of expertise is also when it's not just one individual, but when there's people coming together to do the work of an organization. And how do you process tensions then? That's something that we'll spend a little bit more time on. But before we do that, I want to take a 5-minute break, which has been an experiment and has worked well. So we'll continue to do it. So you'll take, you know, we'll have 5 minutes for you to take a toilet break or just get a drink or get up and stretch. We'll just play some music, and then after 5 minutes, we'll dive right back in and actually start with exactly this question. I have attention, now what? Anything to add, Brian, before we go into the break?
No, that sounds great. I'll talk to you more in a few minutes.
Yes, okay. Talk to you in 5. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I hope that was good. I always really like taking a few minutes to stretch and move when I'm on a call like this. It's not as easy to do in the real meeting, of course, but it's pretty easy to do in these types of meetings, so I hope that was nice. And, for the past hour, we've been going into tensions and what they are, how you sense them, and how you process them. And I'd like to ask Brian to take us a little bit deeper on the latter part. So how do you process them, and how do you... You know, what do you do when there's other people involved?
Yeah. Let's talk about meetings. I don't know how many people leave meetings feeling like, wow, that was the best possible use of my time imaginable. I loved it. It was exciting. You know, I don't think that's our typical experience in meetings. But I think it could be if we get really clear on tension processing and a really good process to do it. So here's a suggestion I think pretty much anyone running a meeting can use pretty easily. Be conscious of how you're building your agendas for your meeting. So if you're building agendas in advance for your meeting, you've got a problem. At least for the vast majority of meetings, building an agenda in advance is a recipe for processing things unconsciously. So, you know, how many times do you feel like you show up in a meeting and you're going through the agenda because it's the agenda, as opposed to because it's directly relevant to the most important tension you sense today? So first suggestion, don't build your agenda in advance. Build it dynamically on the fly at the start of your meeting. Now, you may have an overarching framework that this, you know, sits within a broader meeting process, but when it comes down to what issues do we need to deal with, build them on the fly in the meeting, and don't try to build them based on a consensus of what issues should we talk about. Rather, take turns with each person giving an agenda item, right? And that agenda item represents one tension sensed by that person that they would like help processing, right? So build your agenda on the fly, one tension at a time, one person at a time. Avoid the temptation to talk all about the issue, right? It's you're building your agenda quickly as a placeholder. So it's one or two words, quick, fast, no discussion, one or two words, capture the agenda item, move to the next person, one or two words, capture that as an agenda item, and go on around until everybody's got their agenda points up there. So what this setup does for you you're not what you're not doing is just saying, here's a topic we should talk about. As soon as you go there, it invites everyone to bring their tensions and compete for the space. Right? So build your agenda dynamically on the fly, one tension at a time, with each person raising an agenda item. Then move through the agenda one item at a time, and when you get to the item, make sure you're clear who is your sensor of the tension, right, that you're trying to resolve here. It's whoever raised the agenda item. It is no one else. You are not trying to resolve anyone else's tension. You are not trying to satisfy anyone else other than the one person who raised that agenda item. If somebody else has some tension around it that isn't addressed, they should add their own agenda item, not try to co-opt the space when it's somebody else's turn. Right? So it's amazing what happens when you do this. And then the facilitation of this is pretty transformative as well. When you get to an agenda item, and you know who raised that agenda item, and you know they're the sensor of attention, and it's their space to resolve it, your job, whether you're the facilitator, the leader, or another participant, your job is not to solve their problem for them. It's not to heroically lead to a resolution of their tension. It's just to give them space and support. So the question, if you're the facilitator, the question for them is, okay, what do you need? Right? You brought up this agenda item. You're sensing attention. How can we help you? What would you like? What do you need? And be clear, when everybody's jumping in then and supporting, they're not trying to address your own tensions. And of course, that's easy to say and hard to do. What you'll notice and what you can do is notice this in yourself. When it's somebody else's agenda item, so you've got your turn-taking set up, it's someone else's turn, what you'll notice yourself doing, if you're like most people, is suddenly the discussion goes and it triggers tension for you, and before you know it, you're trying to resolve the tension. You're trying to resolve your tension that you sense, that you just think is related. Notice that tendency and let it go. If you want to add an item to the agenda, add your own item to the agenda to address your tension. But it's not the space for that. So just notice your own tendency to jump in and co-opt the space to make it about solving your tension. Or notice your tendency. Some people find their tendency is to take on others' tensions as if they were their own, even though they're not, and try to resolve them for other people. So they bring up agenda items for others. Notice that bad habit of trying to support others that way, and let it go, and instead invite them to bring up their own agenda item and process their own tension. So there are many different techniques you can use for this meeting and meeting processes around it, but just these basic ideas, whatever process you use, be clear. Agenda items represent tensions. Each one is sensed by one person. And when you get there, the facilitation energy is not, what are we going to do about this issue? It's to the person sensing it. What do you need? And whenever it feels like we're kind of off track, collapse back to that. Okay, so this was your agenda item, your tension. What do you need? And as soon as that person says, I'm complete, I've got what I needed, check it off. You're done. There's nothing else to talk about. Done, cut off all discussion, move on. If anyone else has their own tension that they'd still like to go into, they can add it to the agenda. It's a fascinating discipline, and what it forces is more clarity and awareness of the unit of consciousness that I call attention. Right? And the fact that we're taking turns being the conscious agent addressing something for the collective organization. So it's probably if just a single thing I can offer in terms of how to work together collectively, it's that. Get real clarity on one tension at a time processing through that kind of agenda building and that kind of focus with each item. How's that land for you, Diedrich?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I have actually seen meetings transformed by using just these few principles. Like you said, it's not necessarily easy. When you're in a space where you can actually facilitate or lead meetings, then it's a little bit easier to introduce. If you're just a participant in a meeting, then I've noticed that the very least that you can do is to kind of take this stance yourself and to apply these principles yourself. Sometimes that will be kind of modeling the behavior that others start picking up, sometimes not, but that's maybe sometimes as far as your influence goes. Yeah, but I have really seen this change meetings. It's
and
kind of sounds
clear,
like.
Let me add too. Even if you don't have the formal, role of running the meeting, people are reasonable, right? Go to them and give them a pitch. Just make a suggestion. How about we try building the agenda, on the fly with just one or two words. Try it. It's not hard to convince somebody to give a shot to a simple change like that that might make for better meetings. Who doesn't want better meetings? So, there's lots of ways to influence that, even if you're not the one facilitating it.
So I'm also thinking that we want to take some time for Q&A. That's one thing. And the other thing is we've talked about process intentions. We haven't really talked about Holacracy as such. And in a way, for people that are more familiar with it, this will be, you know, relatively familiar territory. And you can see how this ties into the bigger operating system of Holacracy. These are just some pieces from it. So that's really a resource that I would point people to. But I'm also wondering, before we go into Q&A, and maybe it's a tall order, Brian, but I'm wondering, what does it feel like when you're practicing this? You know, when you're practicing conscious business in the sense of bringing your full consciousness to tensions, to all the tensions that you're sensing, and to how you process those tensions. You know, what's it like to live in an organization like that? Just to get a taste of that before we then go into Q&A.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It kind of feels like plugging your organization into evolution. And what I mean by that is, actually two things. One, when you are clear that you are showing up as an agent with your consciousness being harnessed and integrated as an instrument for this organization's flight towards its purpose, one of the things that does is highlight the difference between you and the organization. So I think one of the things this kind of thinking and way of working does is start really helping you get a boundary identified and differentiated, which ultimately is liberating on both sides. So I think right now today, organizations are so fused with us humans, often not with all of us, but with some group at the top somewhere. And even in some progressive, very inclusive organizations, there's still this fusion where there's no boundary between the identity of the organization and those within. So you see organizations that are trying to pursue the shared purpose of every human within. Now imagine if we raised our children like that, just to get an idea of what I mean by a different identity. Imagine if us, parents and family members all got together and said, what is the purpose for our child that we want that will serve us well? I'd like my kid to be a doctor when he grows up. That would help me and meet my needs and fund some of my retirement. I think we're in a mode of just, there's a fusion and a projection. We look to the organization as an extension of ourself to meet our own needs, our own personal needs, right? And we use it. We look at it as a tool, something to use for our sake, in the same way that we once looked at children, right? That's exactly the way we looked at children and women historically in Western societies. And we've evolved mostly beyond those views by realizing that there is another entity here, and there's a utility in liberating it to find its own identity. And one of the things this does when you do this that I've experienced and is really powerful, there's a liberation of looking at the organization kind of like a child, or you would like a child. It's not our job to project upon it, to use it for our own ends, not because our own passion and purpose and values aren't important to us, they are, but it helps us see those as something different, a different identity, and own them ourselves, while still choosing to be a steward of something beyond us, choosing to show up just like a parent and caretake and help raise and steward something, not for our sake, but to help it find its path in the world. What is its deepest purpose? What is its creative potential to unfold in the world? And the more you get these clarity of boundaries and of tensions and of what tensions you're sensing and from what role, what instrument are you? Not just as a human, but what role are you filling? Are you filling the finance role or the training role or what role are you filling that's sensing the tension that is a constraint to that role's purpose? And you get to show up as a steward for that and the same way parents do for their children. So there's a differentiation that happens and that enables a more conscious integration. So we can be autonomous adults. We can shift from the parent-child dynamics we see in organizations, where we look to the organization to be hopefully a good parent and caretake us victims within, and instead shift to an adult-to-adult relationship, where we are free, autonomous entities, that we own our own values, our own purpose, our own path, and we're in relationship with another and agree of our free will to show up as steward. So that's the first piece. And then what happens when you're an agent like this, not infusing your own identity in, but holding that boundary and that stewardship, then you're using your consciousness and you're fueling everything you sense, all these tensions, to evolve the organization. What you get is this organizational entity that can wake up, in a sense. It's like you get a conscious organization through us conscious humans. And not just a conscious one, but one that is evolving constantly, right? There's an evolutionary algorithm here to each of us senses the tension. We do something with it to change something in the organization, and that is an evolutionary step. And then we see, does that work? So there's a fitness function. All evolutionary algorithms will have a fitness function. In this case, the fitness function is purpose. Right? Purpose is your fitness function. You're going to try lots of things by using your consciousness to sense reality and do something with it, process your tensions. Each of those is a little incremental adaptation to the organization. And you're going to test it in reality against, does it help express the purpose? So what you're doing is plugging your organization into evolution. You're continually evolving that organization, what it is, its design, its structure, its actions in the world, to better express the purpose. And you're doing it as this awake, alive, living system. It's really, really cool when this is really fully, thoroughly embodied, and you've got the systems and structures to support it. And it all starts with one person deciding, I'm going to show up differently in my organization today. I'm going to use my consciousness. I'm going to hold it differently. I'm going to own it, differentiate it from, and then give space for others, not dominate their space as we're used to get our own stuff processed. One person starts that shift, and it snowballs from there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, when you're describing what it's like to live in that type of organization, I notice myself going, I want to live in that organization. I want to work in that organization. And I do, to some extent, because you should know, I think you maybe know, but not all of our participants know that waking up the workplace runs holocratically. And I think actually it is a really key piece of being where we are today, being able to offer this course, because we have kind of not a lot of time. We all do other stuff on the side, or in a way, sometimes this is almost on the side, and yet we have a lot to get done, a lot of tension, a lot of stuff to get processed. So this is really alive for us. And I also really want to thank you, Brian, for offering this to the world, because it's helped us a lot.
No, it's I can't help it. It's just the work I do.
Exactly. So I want to open it up at the end to hear from a few people and do some short Q&A. We'll also do the 30-minute open discussion at the end. And we'll probably go a few minutes over time just to get some question or some Q&A going. But again, just press 1 if you have a comment or a question for Brian. And we'll take a few of those and then wrap up and go into final 30 minutes of open discussion. So press 1 and let's see. Let's hear from the first person. Hi, Gary. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. So I was just starting. Thank you for letting me have some space here. Hi, Brian. I'm new to the holacracy concept, so this is kind of cool. And one of the questions that formulated during our breakout was, what happens when organizations have a fear and a lack of learning from mistakes? I work with a lot of corporate clients, and mistakes are death to them. They would rather drive themselves off a cliff than avoid an early indicator mistake.
Yeah.
Have you run into that? What's kind of your thoughts around that?
Yeah, well, there's the broader system and practice of holacracy that bakes in certain rules and processes to kind of counteract that tendency. I think it's much harder when you don't have supporting structures and systems that counteract that. Then it's up to you to heroically work your way through that somehow. And it is much harder, but there's still things you can do. And I think it's one of the reasons I love the word and the meaning of tension, and that it's a neutral, and processing tensions, because it brings you right back to when something happens, we humans tend to judge it. We feel a tension and we immediately jump to judgment. We judge it as a bad thing that we should not have happened, or that we should prevent, or something like that. And the interesting thing about that meaning making, you are judging reality, and that doesn't change anything. right? Saying that, you know, this is a problem, even that meaning-making. Ah, this thing happened, it's a problem. It shouldn't have happened. Doesn't change the fact that it did. All that really matters is what's next. That's it. You know, so you're sensing something. You can judge it all you want, but recognize that is you applying your human meaning-making frame onto it. Whether you judge it as a problem or a big, exciting opportunity, either one. And all of that's fine. We humans make meaning, and that will happen, and that's not a bad thing. What this frame does in this way of looking at things, it helps you see that. It helps everyone involved when this language is kind of encoded like a virus into a company. It helps people see, look, all that matters is I'm sensing something consciously. There is a tension. And all that matters is what am I going to do to process it? So it kind of keeps us out of the blame, the fear, the projections. It grounds it so much more just to get pulled back to, so what? What are we going to do? And you see the same thing in the meetings when you're this clear on whose tension is it, right? So they can complain all they want, but you just bring it back to, well, hey, you're sensing a tension. What do you need? And what are you going to do about it? What's next? So that's one thing. And what happens, the transformation I see again and again in companies that really embody this, you end up with the culture shifting. So when people are used to tensions as energy to improve things rather than a bad thing to prevent, that changes everything. I think a lot of companies today are built to try to prevent tensions. And that's not how evolution around us works, for one. It's quite the opposite. It's try something, experience, you know, try it, see how it works in reality, and use that as fuel to see what's next and what's change. And so it shifts that entire view to a more evolutionary one, one that's grounded in don't try to prevent tensions, rather get so damn good at processing them so quickly that you don't need to prevent them. And that's the shift. So when I work with organizations, often that energy of I need to try to prevent them makes some sense. So I try to honor that, start with them where they are, and then invite them to the other question, which is, you know, what if you could process everything that was experienced so quickly and so at a minor detail scale that you didn't have to try to prevent most of these things? Because you could just adapt to them so damn quickly, and you'd know exactly what to adapt to. You'd spend a lot less time adapting in theory or designing in theory ways to prevent things that theoretically could or could not happen. How many times do you see time wasted trying to deal with problems that probably will never occur? Right? Instead, we'll know exactly what to deal with because we'll experience it, and we'll get so damn quick at processing it that it doesn't matter. So that's at least some of my thoughts on that. But again, it's not an easy problem by any means, and you're going to eventually, there's a lot you can do individually, and you'll eventually need to find supporting structures and systems and processes if you want to really change things at a larger scale.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie. So let's hear from someone else. Hi, Fiona. Are you there? Hello, Fiona. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Ah, right. Hi, Brian. It's Fiona. Fiona Hayes.
Hey, Fiona. Good to hear from you again.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Great to hear your voice again, actually. Great to hear all that you're talking about. My thought process is sort of seesawing between the extremely large organizations and extremely small organizations, and the balance of how you get started utilizing Holacracy in each. So if you take the challenge that that I brought you in Los Angeles a little while back, which we never did manage to solve within the organization at that time, and then seesaw that between the fact that I am currently starting up a new organization with just currently three people in it, and the differences between starting Holacracy in those two types of organizations. And I wondered if you could speak a bit to how you go about those two different scenarios. That they, just for the people listening, the large organization had 4,000 people in it.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's probably I could spend an hour on that, but I'm sure there's some other people that probably wouldn't
like
that.
You can, Brian.
So let me see if I can give you a quick answer and point you to some more deeper stuff too. For the startups, actually a colleague of mine in Holacracy One, my company here, is actually just finished a quick start guide that I'm hoping they'll publish soon on our website that's for the small organizations that just want to dive in and get started with it. And it's kind of, here's all the steps to walk through. The larger organizations, of course, is a really big topic. We do have some calls recorded in a community of practice you can find on our website that go into in more depth and some examples of how we deal with larger organization implementations. The one common thread I'll highlight now, in either case, the first shift, if you're really adopting Holacracy, which is a distributed power system that's built around processing tensions, the first shift is adopt the Holacracy Constitution, which is the rules of the game for this distributed power system. So that's the first thing we do in either case. We find where does the power lie right now and have that power holder seed their power into a process held by the Constitution. From there, it's just about applying the process, learning the rules of the game, and giving everybody a chance to understand this new way of processing tensions, of meeting, of showing up together, and all that. So that's the really short answer. Of course, there's a lot more we could dig into, but that's the quick one.
Great. So let's get another question. Let's hear from Nick. So we're unmuting you. Hi, Nick. You there?
Hi, it's Nick here from England. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
You can, great. First of all, thank you very much, Brian, for coming up with Holacracy. I've recently come across it, and I really love it. I do some training called Effective Groups, and so far it feels like I've had lots of pieces of a puzzle, but I haven't had the picture of the puzzle to put it together, and it feels like you've just given me the picture to make the puzzle out of. So thank you for that. I've got a question that's about dynamic steering. I've just been learning a little bit about Holacracy and a bit about your concept of dynamic steering as opposed to predicting control. And I'm in a role of a critical friend, which is supporting people who are leading sustainability projects in organizations. And these people are in a context where their mindset and the organizational context is very much about predicting control, make action plans, set milestones, measure impact against all of these. And my question is, have you got any tips of how to support these people in doing more dynamic steering, given that they're in that predict and control context?
Yeah, you know, the short answer, I think, would be obsolete the need for what they're doing now. So they're finding some value in what they need now, or what they're doing now. Often the value found in predict and control, though, is not that it actually works. It's that it makes us feel good about what we're doing, like we're doing things right, it gives us a very comforting illusion of control. The way we typically plan and manage and predict and control work gives us a beautiful illusion of control. So I think the shift then is obsolete the need for that by giving them a system that gives them more real control, real ability to guide reality, more real feedback, real data, real tension processing. If you can't process tensions, all you can do is delude yourself to try to prevent them, which is predict and control. If you want dynamic steering, you've got to have the capacity to process any tension that comes up quickly and easily. And that gives you more real control. So step number one, consider introducing them to GTD, which is David Allen's method. It's a dynamic steering friendly foundation for how you manage your own work and actions and projects. And then two, get the system in place to give so much transparency and visibility and adaptability that you just don't feel the need to predict and control, and then you let it die a natural death. Of course, that's all easy to say and harder to do, but that's the approach we take.
Okay, and if they're working in a system where they probably won't have the influence to change that system, so does it mean that they can only really use step one then and just see how far they get with that?
Now, you can always do something more than that. Fake it. I had this challenge when I ran a software company and tried to use much more adaptable dynamic methods for how we built software for clients. Well, sometimes the clients didn't want that. They wanted a nice predictive approach. So what we can do on our side is give them a veneer of predictability while we're still taking a tension processing driven dynamic approach to embody it and manifest it while still showing the outside world what the outside world needs to see to have their nice comforting illusion. And it's often a good first step to invite them then to maybe peer a little under the hood when there's trust, when they're ready, and see perhaps a more powerful way of doing it. And it's going to actually enhance your ability to hit a predictive plan, to have a dynamic tension processing system that's responding to reality. You're going to enhance your control, so it's going to help you even hit a very artificial plan. Or know clearly when reality is not going there and be able to adapt sooner.
So we have time for one last question before we wrap up this piece. Or actually, we don't have time, but we make time for it because we're already a little bit over time. So let's hear from Christiana. Christiana, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. I have a cold, so my voice is a little off. I had a question in terms of, well, first of all, thank you. I think this is fabulous, and it applies so much to the workforce. When you have somebody in a meeting or in the decision-making process that has difficulty putting words around, you're talking about tensions. There's tensions in the head, thinking, tensions in how they feel about a situation, hiring somebody, for example, and providing that space for that individual to be able to sort of not go against what they're feeling. What do you recommend for them in those situations? For example, somebody may feel that they shouldn't be hiring somebody, but they can't get the words out. Their mind says, well, I can't, therefore I should hire.
Yeah. So I think, one, a good meeting process can help with that. If you have a meeting process that kind of works for different styles and allows space, actually, to some extent, any good structured meeting process will help with that at least to some degree. So that's one. Two, the more you have a what we call a dynamically steered environment, or said another way, the more you can revisit anything at any time. And now there are certain decisions like hiring somebody that may not work for, but the more you generally have a very fluid environment where as soon as somebody who's sensing something figures out what they're sensing, they ought to be able to bring it back up and address the issue. I think too many of our environments today have the opposite ethic, which is we've already decided that. Let's shut down any ability to revisit something. And it's no wonder when it's so painful to make a decision around here that you don't want to revisit. But if you get the other energy in place, which is we're going to make fast, rapid, workable decisions, and we're going to revisit anything, anytime, as soon as some new insight has crystallized, some new tension has surfaced. It makes it easier for those that are still working out what their tension is to try something. And the other interesting thing, the best way I've found to help figure out what a tension really is to try to process it, not to try to figure out what it is. And I think that's a fascinating, just experiential realization I've had. The more somebody in that space just tries to do something with it, the act of doing or of trying to process the tension in some way will reveal to them more clarity about what they're really sensing and will help them shape it and hone it. So try to process it would be my short advice.
Makes a lot of sense. Sorry.
Great. So that more or less takes us to the end of at least the main part or this final part. Again, a little bit over time, but I thought that was just too juicy to stop, so we've taken the liberty of taking a few extra minutes. So for wrap-up, and before we go into the final 30-minute open breakouts, so you're welcome to hang around almost like a cafe style after the class, sitting in the bar and chatting thing. Before we do that, I really want to thank you, Brian, for showing up for this class today and sharing basically everything but Holacracy, which wasn't that easy to take different pieces from a system that's kind of integrated and really complete. But I think you've managed to do a great job. I've also noticed that a few people do have more familiarity with it, so that's great. But maybe for those that don't, you can point them to some resources where they can go deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Our website, holacracy.org, is a great wealth of resource. It's just note the spelling. It's not spelled how a lot of people sometimes try to spell it. It's H-O-L-A, not O. H-O-L-A-C-R-A-C-Y.org. On that website, you'll find lots of videos. There's an introductory video, hour-long presentation. There's a follow-up one that's a 90-minute presentation of a meeting process that's pretty unique. There's articles, there's other audios, there's lots of resources on there. Just click About Holacracy, you'll see a whole ton of them on that page. Dig around, explore. We also have trainings, of course. We do trainings in the U.S. and Europe, and we're now just scheduled our first down in Australia. So we'll be in that area as well. You'll find all of those on our website. That's probably your best bet for the deeper dive. And feel free to reach out and contact us if there's anything we can do or point you to. We also have a Facebook page for Holacracy One, the organization. Holacracy One is the company that spreads this in the world, or one of them anyway. And lots of activity there, and feel free to post questions or comments on our Facebook page.
Cool. And just as a reminder, we're editing the recording of this and creating a workbook around today's class that we'll put online in the next 24 hours. That will really help you to further deepen some of this, doing some exercises and bringing it to life, taking it into your own work. So we'll do some work on that, and you'll see that tomorrow. Next week, we have a class coming up with Bill Torbert, which is going to be a lot about inquiry, about asking great questions, about learning, about communicating. So a lot of really important pieces of the conscious business puzzle. So looking forward to that as well. In the meantime, again, I'm going to wrap up. Thank Brian. I know that you won't be able to stay for the last 30 minutes. So anyone else, welcome to stay. But for now, we'll say goodbye to Brian and move on to the last 30-minute discussion forum. So thanks, Brian.
Hey, thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Diedrich, for hosting this and pulling all this great stuff out. I had a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone, for listening and asking questions and generally engaging. Really appreciate all your time. And maybe I'll connect with some of you down the road, virtually or in person.
Cool. Okay. So now for the final part, which is kind of the hangout and cafe space, we're going to break you out into groups of four, maybe one or two groups even of five, depending on the number. No instructions. It's completely open. You can share questions, comments. You can get to know each other a little better. It's something that we've noticed a lot of you are really appreciating, to just have some space for reflection that you normally might do in the bar with a beer or another drink. It's harder to do it virtually, but we found this workaround. So we're going to put you in little groups again. When you hear the ding, you'll be in a room with maybe four or five other people. Just announce yourself, and we'll take maybe 15 minutes or so, and then we'll come back and wrap up the class as a whole. So when you hear the ding, just announce yourself, and enjoy the conversation. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the main room. Hope you enjoyed those conversations. As always, we kind of walk around just to see that everything's going all right and sometimes listen in a little bit. Sounded like you had some interesting conversations going. As I said before, Brian has left by now. But I'd be really curious to hear any last insights or comments. We'll probably take a few minutes before we wrap up this call. So again, if you want to quickly share, an insight or comment, then just press 1, and then we'll be able to see you and unmute you and hear from you. I'm really curious to hear what you took out from that, or what are your questions. I may be able to answer some of them, since I've been practicing Holacracy for a couple of years in different organizations. But unfortunately, Brian had to leave, so we don't have the benefit of his wisdom and experience anymore. he did say that he was going to log into the Academy website and see if there are any comments there that he might be able to respond to. So if you have specific questions about Holacracy or to Brian, I would suggest you throw those on the Academy page. So in the meantime, a few comments. Let's hear from Dino. Hi, Dino.
Hi, Diederik. Good day.
Hey.
Thank you for giving me the space. Hope you're doing fine. It was a great session again today. Thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you.
Actually, I was in a group with Dietrich, Adis, and Gert, and we had very interesting share of thoughts. And one thing that we were talking about is what is that now exactly? What that purposeful flow? What Brian was mentioning and referring to, and what helped me a lot is one explanation in let's say comparing it versus planning, what you do in organizations often that we want to plan something as a to reach an outcome or a goal, that is really different from the purpose of an organization if you give it the space to create itself and to flow in time. That helped me a lot in understanding a bit more what Brian was saying on that topic. So found it good to share it with the rest.
Cool. Yeah, and I think it'd be really nice to share any insights like that or further questions if you have any on the Academy page, and even Brian might even jump in and add a few clarifications to that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing that, Dino. So let's hear from a few more people. Let's hear from Ariel. Hi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here in cold Prague.
Hi.
How are you? I just feel so excited. I just felt like one of those moments, during the whole evening, I felt like time is kind of one of those movie moments where the future, the past, and the present all kind of swirled in this sort of vision of all these pictures of, wow, how exciting if in the past we had just had this tool to work with at some of the companies and groups that I've worked with, and just I all of a sudden got this picture of how different the meetings could have been, instead of 5 hours of monotonous going through the list, blah, 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 what we could have created, and thinking about clients right now who just, we're talking about these exact issues that were coming up, and Brian just really hit everything on the head, everything that I thought of, well, what about this? And he'd say it, what about that? And it's just really exciting, because now I think it's 9 o'clock, and I'm already really excited for tomorrow and talking about it with people. So I'm just delighted for tonight. Thank you so much. I'm exhausted, so I didn't expect to be energized at 9 o'clock at night. Wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, that's really cool. And I really recognize that point that you're bringing. And you should also be aware that once you start practicing some of these principles and techniques that he suggested for how you run meetings or how you participate in meetings, that it's kind of a virus, because in a way you can't go back. And if you start doing meetings this way and you get used to it, then, when you're in kind of a normal meeting or a traditional meeting, you're going to go crazy. I get this all the time. When you get used to your flowing, rapid, clear meetings where everyone's processing their own tensions, we did one just today for Waking Up the Workplace, you cannot go back to traditional meetings. It's horrible. So that's a disclaimer, if you will.
Well, that's a great disclaimer in, looking forward to talking to people about this is, really give it a go and feel the difference. And, everybody, even the most close organizations I know, are willing to give something a shot, once or twice. So I just get excited at the idea of that possibility of even like one small piece of transformation within a company and how that could ripple out like a stone in the puddle. So thank you.
Yeah, do share your experience of trying that out in the different places that you go. That would be a lot of fun to read about.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. So maybe one more person before we wrap for the day. So let's hear from Adi. I think last time I said Adi. This time I'll say Adi, and you can tell me which one is right.
The second one, Adi.
Great, thanks.
Hi. Well, it's mind-blowing, everything, and I've read a lot about Holacracy before the call, but suddenly what came up, especially in the coffee space that we had, I work a lot with felt sense in a completely different context, non-business context, through somatic experiencing, which is Peter Levine's work for trauma healing. And it kind of, something that the body never lies, you know, and attention is a felt sense experience. And I was wondering, you know, if even in meetings, which is even to take it one step further, to kind of guide the sharing through the felt sense, then it cleans it up even more. The tension doesn't become a cognitive, mindy, what do I think the tension is, but rather even a cleaner experience of, you know, something more direct. More like an arrow straight to the point, because the felt sense is never lies in that sense. It's not; it doesn't get distorted by the mind. So for that, actually, you need some guidance and practice. But I think everything in Holacracy is probably needs discipline. So that's just those were my feelings that came up for taking it even deeper, even for me, just to kind of feel where my felt sense is. Where do I feel the tension in the body? Of course, where does it associate? But it's another perspective of the tension, even if it's in the workplace, even if it's just a work-related tension.
Mm. I love that, and in a way, like Holacracy is a structure for guiding, you know, that process that you were just describing. And the image that came up for me was, like, in a way, Brian focuses on that structure and says that it basically works for everyone. In a way, but the other piece of that, of course, is that if you're more conscious of, for example, of the body and of all the information that it's giving you and all of the ways that it can't lie, like you said, then there's so much more richness to the tensions that you can sense and that you can bring in and that you can channel into Holacracy or any organizational system, really. So it's almost like going from a narrow band to broadband radio. I don't know if that metaphor works technically, but it works for me. So that's what I really like about Brian's piece. It's not just about the individual and becoming more conscious. It's also about creating a structure that can then harness that consciousness and the tensions that are sensed.
Mm. Yeah. And thank you. Actually, the metaphor resonates well for me as well.
Mm. Cool. Love it when that happens. I think for people that actually know stuff about radio, they probably tell us that that's not how it works. But that doesn't matter because we get it.
Exactly.
Cool. So thanks. I'm going to wrap up for today. Again, we went a little bit over time, 5 minutes. It's just so rich and it's so hard to say goodbye and to to stop hearing from more people. But of course, we have to do it. And we're going to do it. So like I said, tomorrow you'll find the recording and the workbook for this session online. Share your comments on the page. Brian will probably look in and share some last thoughts. And I really recommend you check out some of his resources at holacracy.org. There's a lot of good stuff there. And like I said, we use it, and it works for us. So we're going to open up the lines, have everyone say goodbye. I think that's a really beautiful way of ending this. So whatever your language is, when we open up the lines, just share what you want to share, and then that's it for today. So thanks, and talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.